Guess what day it is?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling. Apologies for the delay in the start of the program. There was a, I don't know, Mary, you can tell me if it's over.
Yes.
There's a truck on fire on 88 eastbound.
Yeah, it's still there.
And it happened sort of in front of me, but it took about, I don't know, 15 minutes to go an eighth of a mile, 15, 20 minutes.
Ooh. There's a box truck, right?
Yeah.
Oh, nasty. There's a lot of fires.
Burned up real good.
Oh, I'm glad you're okay.
So, but do you have that moment where you have that TV crime show brain where you go, oh, this is going to blow up. It's going to blow up right when I pass.
Oh, man.
But the fire department folks and the EMT folks were there.
So no need for your assistance?
I did jump out.
Oh.
And then I jumped right back in. So, on the program today, Karen Conti will be on. You know, we got to ask Karen Conti about is Jeff Sessions' obsession with pot. The attorney general wants to shut pot down. And the majority of the show has never, I don't know if there's another show like this in the world. The majority of the show has never smoked pot.
I know, isn't it free? Isn't that crazy?
I haven't, you haven't?
No, and it hasn't, or wait.
Sandberg definitely has. Sandberg sells it.
And it's not talking. She does not.
No,
I'm not. Kidding.
Sandberg hasn't. Vanderbilt, did you ever weed it up?
No. Weed it up?
Okay, wait, have you ever tried?
Did you ever try the pot?
Okay, I did try.
Okay,
I'll admit.
So,
okay, well, that's
my kids know.
Then you're on the list.
And I choked. And
all right, so me,
Jeff
not good.
Sessions wants to arrest you.
Me, you, uh-huh. And Sandberg have never. I mean, that is pretty rare.
Never, yeah. Ever.
Dave, do you still
never,
have a meth
ever,
lab?
Ever, ever.
No, I got rid of that several
never.
Years ago.
I've smelled it wafting at concerts. But
yeah,
it's never touched my lips or been ingested.
The only drugs I have ever experimented with are the prescription kind that doctors have given me.
Oh.
Joe Romano, what kind of a drug addict are you?
I actually just got out of rehab. So
that's not true.
Yeah.
It's completely not true.
So thanks for giving me a
shot. I assume you've tried pot.
Yeah, I've tried pot.
Have you tried anything worse than pot or more strong than pot? Would you tell me if you did?
Yes.
Are you lying to me right now?
Maybe.
All right.
Oh, you are lying.
No.
It's 6:17. We'll do the top six at 6 coming up. And at some point this morning, I'm going to give you a mathematical solution or potential solution to the border wall.
Oh, you have a solution?
I believe I do.
That's good.
I believe I do. I believe I can save us billions of dollars.
By just not building it altogether?
Yeah, that's one of the answers.
Okay.
Yeah, an alternative to a wall.
Legos?
Oh, I want to hear this.
No, at one point I thought, remember when CDs were a thing like 2 or 3 years ago?
Uh-huh.
Remember how, you know, how hard it is to open a CD?
Yes.
I thought if we wrapped the border entirely in whatever they package CDs with, no one could ever get across.
Oh, how about that?
Right.
Or saran wrap? You know, you can wrap
a saran wrap, though. Saran wrap, I think, is easier to get through than the CD wrap.
You know what, though? If you wrap... Okay, this is going to make me sound weird. If you wrap a couch in saran wrap, it stays. I'm serious. Not that I have any experience with that. But I do.
What's that thing, Dave, back in when you were a kid where your mom would put a covering on the couch? So
slip covers.
Yeah, but not slip covers. There's another word for it.
No, plastic.
It's like a plastic covering. But what's that called?
We were Greek, so every...
Plastic?
You still are Greek.
No, I mean, growing up Greek, though, because now, of course, my mom doesn't do it, but all the relatives would put plastic on the couches.
Yeah, there's a name for it, though.
They put
runners. It's the same thing, but there's a name for it.
They had plastic runners on the floor, too, leading into the room.
Yeah, we had.
So it was like a museum. You had to walk on the plastic.
Did you have theater ropes?
No, they could have put velvet ropes up, though. But you had to walk on the plastic into the room in with the plastic couches that you couldn't sit on. Yeah, that was every Greek house.
We had a plastic runner from our front door, from our foyer, to our kitchen, through the living room, so you didn't mess up the carpet.
Yeah.
We just went with linoleum. works.
And when you vacuumed, it had to make the perfect vacuum marks, too.
Oh, this is Mom's idea, or?
This is the Greek culture.
So all Greeks vacuum that way?
I'm pretty sure. I would go out on a limb and say 90%.
Hmm.
We can ask.
You know, Vandeveld has exercise equipment on her porch.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, I just trashed the place. Whatever.
Yeah. It's 619 update on the traffic, and we will come back with the top six at six.
Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel. It's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks. With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
Wacky day in the White House, mostly because the president never looked more like the president. He actually looked presidential. Did a nice job. President Trump had Senate and congressional leaders in the White House yesterday for what amounts to normally a pool spray, which is a selected group of reporters, a couple of reporters, a couple of cameramen, who are, and sometimes more, who are allowed to stay for the beginning of a meeting. 5 minutes. 5-6 minutes. And then they're kicked out. The reporters were allowed to stay for 55 minutes. 55. That hasn't happened since Thomas Jefferson was president.
No, that's about right.
In the 55 minutes, the president was very charming. He was a bon vivant. He was very happy to have everyone there. He said, "My opinion is your opinion." That part was a little scary, and was a little confused about where he stands on the immigration thing. But it was a show of an attempt at getting along. He even brought up bringing back earmarks, which was the last time that Congress actually got deals done. And the people in the room laughed at first. But the fact is, if it's controlled, it's not a bad idea, because you got a bunch of kids in a room who can't play nice with each other. You give them a reason to play nice and a lever, a vehicle, a motive, a way to play nice, mm-hmm. Earmarks. Could work. So he was quite impressive. Yeah, he made some mistakes, but he was quite impressive in this moment, and that threw everybody off.
It threw me off when he talked about comprising a bill of love.
A bill of love. That's exactly right. By the way, he left and then started tweeting that what I meant was a federal judge also temporarily blocked Trump's decision to end the Dreamer program. That seems to go with what Trump said yesterday. But more of yesterday would be much better for the country, just so we're clear. Cook County Assessor Joseph Berrio is facing a $41,000 or more fine. $41,000 in fines is really a total fines dollar figure right now for failing to return campaign contributions from property tax appeals lawyers whose donations exceed legal limits. So basically what happens is the property tax lawyers kick money to Berrio's campaign. Mm-hmm. Berrio's has a certain amount of money he can take. Anything over that is illegal. That's why he's fined $41,000. This all according to a pair of new rulings by the County Ethics Board. This is the great problem with Mike Madigan.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Madigan, for the balance of his career, has had a property tax appeal firm for commercial properties in Chicago. If you want to pay your property tax appealed in Chicago, you essentially have to go through Mike Madigan.
Yeah, that's why the conflict of interest, when we asked Erica Harold about this, too, she's running for AG on the Republican ticket, the conflict of interest, not only with this, but with nepotism, it's just rampant in the city. And $41,000, as you know, Steve, this is not a huge fine to me.
No.
Considering the millions of dollars that people lost off this?
Well, the thing is...
or were cheated out of, I should
the
say.
The fines that are levied, rarely in cases of ethics violations, are something that you have fluid movement on.
Right.
You know, a judge goes, this is what I can work with him.
And it was $1,000 per donation.
Yeah.
But these donations each exceeded $50,000, $60,000.
Yeah.
So they exceeded
it by far
more.
So the law for the fines needs to be changed.
Absolutely, yes.
Then there's this. Are we still crumpling paper? This little fake crumpling paper? We should come up with a new way to get between these stories. Chicago Principals Association President Troy LaRiviere, or is it LaRiviere?
LaRiviere.
Okay, I'll take that
too. Or LaRiviere.
Troy has filed the paperwork to launch a campaign to run against Rahm Emanuel in 2019. Why is that important to you? I expect that field to get bigger. And then... The partisan map must be redrawn in North Carolina. You thought it was Illinois.
Teeth.
But it could change things in Illinois. Of course, we're still waiting for the ruling from the Supreme Court on the Wisconsin map. Every 10 years in Illinois, the ruling party gets to redraw the map any way they like it. Mm-hmm. It then sets up a 10-year run of control. The Democrats have controlled forever. Mm-hmm. It has to be redone. Dennis Fitzsimons used to run this company. He was part of the leadership of a group that tried to go with fair maps. It was shot down by, shockingly, one of Mike Madigan's legal buddies and in a court system that Madigan had some sway over.
But passed an advisory referendum, meaning voters want this.
Of course they do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You described this the best way I've ever heard.
Yeah, you take a piece of stained glass from a church and you drop it on the ground. Shatters into a million pieces. Those broken pieces look like the districts in Illinois. Is it your mom or you?
It's my mom. There's no explanation. Well, both of us. Bobby Rush is my congressman. I live in the city of Chicago. My mom lives 27 miles southwest, border in Cook County, but right on the border of Cook and Will County. Bobby Rush is her congressman as well.
But the state districts, if you look at the state districts, there's one district in particular, I can't remember where it is. It looks like a middle finger. It looks like a fist, and then there's this giant ellipse that pops out of the top of it. I mean,
Champaign County.
State districts should look geometric.
Yes.
And those geometric shapes should be specific to that area.
Absolutely.
Not drawn in a way to make sure Democratic candidates can run or possibly run without competition.
And by the way, that's not a slam on Bobby Rush. That's just to show you how one Chicago congressman, is a far south suburban congressman as well.
Next. President Moon Jae-in of South Korea warned today that Pyongyang would face severe sanctions if they resume weapon tests. That's North Korea. He also credited President Trump with helping force the North to resume the dialogue. Well, all right. Okay. All right, then.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this. Matt Nagy, the new coach of the Chicago Bears, getting lauded for comments he made yesterday, praised for comments he made yesterday in the press conference. Dave, what was your favorite Matt Nagy moment yesterday?
Favorite Matt Nagy?
What did he say yesterday?
You know what I like?
You
know what I like? I think he thanked the right people. He thanked his high school football coach. I like that.
That is nice.
I like that. He didn't leave anybody out.
What did he say about the future? What did he say that made you feel good or optimistic about the Bears? I'm not looking for a specific quote. I'm looking for a general.
He wants to win.
All right, good.
He didn't say that they necessarily will win next year.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would be.
He said he hopes to win next year. Yeah. But I think he was pretty realistic about it. I mean, he's had, 72 hours or so since his team got knocked out of the playoffs. Then he interviewed for a job early the next morning.
And took the job.
Then he took the job the next day. Mm-hmm. I think his head's got to be spinning. I mean, he's had a number of big life changes the last few days.
Very stressful.
Yeah.
But what we're looking for, I think, mm-hmm. is what we saw from John McDonough when he took over the Cubs, mm-hmm. where he said, "We will win. We will win. We're not here to throw a party in Wrigleyville. We will win." And as it turns out, he set that team up to win. And then what did he do? He went to the Blackhawks. Brought Jay Blunk over, built that team over there, brought mm-hmm. Coach Q in, and won three cups in 6 years. That's what you want. You want that kind of fire, Dave. Fire!
Well, and maybe Ryan Pace is the guy who should be saying that, and maybe this is the piece he feels he needs to get them to that point.
I don't think you should call him a piece. That seems insulting to me.
Okay, you know what I mean.
It's 6:30. That's your Top 6 at 6, and it's brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Coming up before the show is over, my mathematical solution to the immigration problem.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing this.
Okay.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
6:38, Karen Conti, attorney at law. Remember she got me out of that thing that time?
That one?
You guys remember? Remember that thing I got into, that mess I got into? And they said, "What are you going to do?" And I said, "I called Karen Conti," and she got me out of that thing.
She's the best.
Yeah. It's funny, this weekend I went to see Molly's game.
Oh, you liked it, right?
I liked it a lot, actually, with Jessica Chastain. And Karen Conti was there getting Jessica Chastain out of trouble, and it was a movie. It surprised me. It really surprised me. Karen Conti, hi.
Hello. I'm everywhere. I'm in Molly's game. I'm helping you. I'm just doing everything.
And just back from Vietnam.
Cambodia, Singapore, and Thailand.
How was the trip?
Awesome.
It was amazing. It wasn't a hard, it wasn't an easy trip. It was a hard trip, but it was one of those things where you come away feeling like you've just read a really good book. It was hard to read, but you come away feeling like I now know more about the world, politics, issues that matter, and really yourself in a lot of ways. So, yeah, it was really a great vacation.
Was there a quiz? Sounds like you were preparing for a test.
No. It was, you experience the beauty of things, and that's wonderful, and it's nice to have good food and a nice place to stay. But, you know, when you're looking at what people have and what they've been through and the tortured history of these countries, the genocide in Cambodia killed a quarter of the population, and there's nobody there who you talk to who really hasn't been affected by the regime that did this and continues to be affected by the politics that go on there. So, you know, Agent Orange is an issue. How they view us is very interesting.
That's what I was going to ask you, Karen. How they view us.
Well, there's got to be mixed emotions here, isn't there? Maybe are they all positive?
Yep.
They are pretty much positive with us. I don't think they approve at all in our involvement in the war. In fact, interestingly, they do not call it the Vietnam War. They call it the American War because that's how they view it. I think the older people are a little bit more critical and holding grudges. The young people want to westernize. They want democracy. They want freedoms, and they want the things that we have. So they're a little bit more inclined to be open to it, but they couldn't have been nicer. And frankly, I was a little worried about that.
So you go to Paris, people are rude to you in a cafe. You go to Vietnam, where we had this war, and they welcome you with open arms.
Yeah, you know, just some of the nicest people I've ever met, truly, in my life.
What did your husband Jerry think?
You know, I think it was unpleasant for him in a way that it wasn't unpleasant for me. I think some people react to that poverty in a way that, it's hard for them. I mean, it's not that it's hard, not hard for me, but I guess I feel uplifted walking away from it because I know that we're so lucky here and that, you know, we in some ways help them in their economy by visiting them and being tourists. I mean, we went into the schools, Steve. We went into the rice paddies. You know, we spent money in their communities. We went into the rural places and markets and, did some things that most people don't do, which, you know, it's hard on your body and it's hard on your spirit, but again, it's the way you accept it and the way what you take away from it, I guess.
Well, and your husband Jerry's a little bit older than you. He would have been Vietnam draft age. Was he drafted?
He wasn't because he joined the National Guard, and that's you're absolutely right. He when we went to the some of the museums where they had some of the horror, that was something that was a little close to him because he had friends who died, of course, and he could have been there too. So I think that maybe haunted him a little bit more than it would me.
Sure, yeah, well, it makes sense. All right, here's the thing I wanted to bring up to you today primarily, and if there's something else you want to jump on, let me know. But we've got an interesting legal situation and an obsession in our attorney general. I'm talking about Jeff Sessions, federal attorney general, with pot, with weed. I don't know how many states now have legalized marijuana, certainly medical marijuana, and many more. But Jeff Sessions says as far as recreational marijuana goes, and maybe this affects medical marijuana, he is going to shut it down because it's had this weird thing that's gone on before Sessions and before Trump. That it's legal in some states, but still against the law federally. It's created all sorts of gray areas. But A, why is Jeff Sessions so obsessed with this? And B, what does it mean legally?
Yes. Well, my last count was that 29 states allow it medically, and about 9 states, including Washington, D.C., allow it for recreational purposes. So we have substantial, situation here where you have the state saying we have these rights and the federal government saying, no, it's still against what the law is called the Controlled Substance Act, which considers marijuana to be an addictive, potentially devastating drug. And so, Obama, back in 2009, sent a message to the prosecutor saying, we really don't think you should be prosecuting this. And the prosecutors have stayed away from it largely. Sessions' obsession, I don't know. I think there is a thought among the Republicans that if you're tough on crime, it'll go away, and that this is crime and this is drugs and we need to prosecute it. I also think there's an idea that we need to roll back everything that Obama did for some reason that may have nothing to do with logic. It doesn't seem logical to me, Steve, just because the feds have so limited, they have limited resources to prosecute. And you know, they have terrorism as their number one goal to eradicate. They have serious narcotics, gang activity, organized crime. They have political corruption, big corporate fraud. Those are their priorities to prosecute, not the guy who's selling medical marijuana, which is legal under state law. That seems like a waste of resources to me. But the president probably influenced Sessions, and now we have a situation where, you know what it's like, sort of like, go ask your mother, you know, like, consider that the father is the state, and the father says, no, you can't stay out, but go ask your mother. Well, the mother, being the federal government, can say, no, you can't, and that rules. So you have a seriously problematic issue when you have people who are sanctioned by states to sell and grow and do these things, and they're regulated, and the feds can come in and put them in jail for, you know, 10 years or more.
Doesn't
which
this
is happening, which is happening right now.
Karen, doesn't this just make a whole legal mess for everyone? Police ticketing, prosecutors prosecuting. What if it's legal in one state and you're transferring it, say, in your bag or your purse from one legal state to another, and even growing it and shipping it? Because it is a crop. Like oranges, you know, it's legal to grow in some states, not in others.
It would be interstate trafficking.
Interstate, yeah.
It causes so many problems. You're right. There's just so many problems with it. And in a big picture, in a theoretical picture, it really encourages lack of respect for the law, right? Because all of these people went through the process to get legalized and do it the right way, and now they're sitting there saying, I put my life savings in this business, and maybe I'm employing a bunch of people, and I'm doing all the right things, and I'm providing services for people and product that people need. And now I may have to give up my liberty because Jeff Sessions is telling people to come in and arrest me for this. I mean, that is a really serious problem. Really, though, I think my bottom line is I don't think that the U.S. Department of Justice is going to do that. I just don't think they have the resources necessary to do it. There have been some laws that have been passed saying we're not going to devote a lot of money to marijuana prosecution. So I think between what Sessions said and the laws that are on the books and the culture of the prosecutors, I don't think they're going to do it. Even Jeff Sessions says that he wants it done. That would be my opinion on how that's going to go down.
All right, stand by. More with Karen Conti coming up, and we'll continue this because it's a conundrum. It's an enigma wrapped in a conundrum, and I think you know how much that is a problem. .653, Karen Conti, famous pot dealer, is on the phone. Well, you're probably better known as a lawyer, I guess, huh?
I'd like to think of myself that way.
Picking up on Andrea's question, let's say I am in Colorado where pot is legal, and I have a friend in California where pot is now legal, and I would like to send them some of my Colorado weed. But to do that, it has to be transferred by mail. Right. Through states where it isn't legal. Have I committed a crime?
Yes, under the federal law you have. And, you know, and that could be prosecuted. There's just, you know, there's all kinds of ways you can violate. And, you know, listen, when you have a conflict between state and federal law, you're going to have massive legal issues. We had this a little bit with the gay marriage situation where, as you recall, before the Supreme Court said that we all had a right to be married, including those who are gay, some states recognized gay marriage and some states did not. And so there was concern when you were married in one state and then you went to another state, would that state recognize the gay marriage and give you rights under the IRS laws, et cetera. So this is the same thing. Now, you know, in that case, the U.S. Supreme Court spoke and said, no, there is a federal, national right to be married, even if you're gay, and therefore we're going to stop all of these, you know, these kinds of issues about recognizing gay marriage. So federal law trumped the state law in that case, and that's the way it works. Same here, same exact here, except that the federal government is being more restrictive, not less restrictive. So, yeah, it presents all kinds of problems, Steve. And the bottom line to me is, we have so many things going wrong with crime and violent crime and narcotics and opioids. Why are we focusing on this when most of the states have realized that there is a good reason for medical marijuana, if not recreational marijuana? So it just seems like a waste of resources.
And with a lack of money in just about every state in the country, and certainly in Illinois, taxing it as a cash crop has proved to be a really smart way to go as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, and the opioid thing you brought up is key. The opioid thing is key because of the opioid problem we have. Every dollar we have to fight drugs now ought to be going to preventing opioid abuse and dealing with it and dealing with people who are addicted.
And there are people, and I don't know that I know this, but there are people who argue that people who are on opioids would rather be smoking pot. I mean, it's a cheaper way to go. And if you let them smoke pot, maybe they won't be on these horribly addicted drugs. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's an argument that I've heard over and over again.
I've heard it as well. What if I drove the pot from Colorado to California? Same problem? Still illegal?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, in those
what if I flew it with a drone? Same problem.
Yeah.
I mean, even if it's legal in both of the states, by transporting it from one state to the other, it's hard to say, Steve. But certainly, this is just a big problem that needs to be resolved with some sort of national edict. They have to repeal this Controlled Substances Act that calls marijuana an addictive drug. And we need to just straighten this all out globally, not just piecemeal. And otherwise, again, disrespect for the law. We need to know what the law is. We need to follow it. And when you're following something and now you're going to be prosecuted, that confuses people and causes disrespect.
Karen, I know we're joking, and Steve's not really going to be flying or transporting marijuana from California to California. Not now that you know the law. But how is it okay for us to go, say, when you go to Mexico and there's a drive-through pharmacy on every street corner and you can pick up Vicodin or whatever sort of something you would need a prescription for here and bring that back? How is that okay?
Well, and again, that could be very complicated too, but I think when you buy it in Mexico and you don't need a prescription for it, you buy it legally. Bringing it back is probably not a crime because you didn't commit a crime by bringing it in. You would have committed a crime by getting it without a prescription. So I don't know that has the same analysis, but there's confusion there too. And gun laws too. I mean, if you have a gun that's legal here, does that mean I can take it across state lines? What are the laws there? Again, you think we would have some sort of national law that would regulate that so people are not confused. And so therefore they can be law-abiding citizens and do it the right way. That's what we want. Tell me what the law is and make people abide by it.
And that's what we know so far of the Jeff Sessions obsession of pot. And again, for people on this show, like Andre and I, who've never even tried it, we're not advocating for it because it's totally rad. We're advocating for it because we think it makes sense and we ought to be spending our money elsewhere. Karen, how do we get a hold of you?
You can call me at 312-332-7800, or my new email address is wgn@askkarenconti.com.
Have a great day.
You too.
6:58. We'll get the highlights of last night's blowout over Ottawa, 8-2 for our Blackhawks, when we come back at 7:20 WGN. All right, your Blackhawks replay. You're going to like this one, sponsored by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing, as the offensive production continued last night in Ottawa.
Skating to a high slot, gave it to Panik. He shoots, he scores for Richard Panik. That's his first goal in 27 games. Sent it over to Sharp left circle. He shoots, he scores. Patrick Sharp. He's got the hot stick of late. That's three goals in his last five games. No Osterley high slot, winds and fires, block, rebound, score! Nick Schmaltz! A backhand shot along the ice and under the glove of Anderson. It's a power play goal, 3-0 Hawks. Sets up Osterley high slot, he fires, save, rebound, score! Jonathan Toews at the top of the crease, snaps it past Craig Anderson. Drops it beside the net to Sharp. He tried to jam it in the short side. He did. Turned wide. Rebound score. Nick Schmaltz with his second of the night. Quick pass now. Forsberg to Kane through center ice over the Ottawa line. Fed the left circle. Ruda shoots and scores. It's a power play goal. The Hawks a season-high 3 power play goals in one game. They're 3-for-4 tonight. Hinostroza down the right wing into the center zone. Gave it to Taves, left circle. Yeah. Shoots and scores! And it's now 7-2 in favor of the Hawks. Kane from the right circle. Shoots, he scores! And for Patrick Kane, that's a career night. 5 points. It's a power play goal. Blackhawks win tonight 8-2. They start the second half of the season with a massive win.
And snuck ahead of the Wild, who they have tomorrow night?
Tonight.
Okay. That's sponsored by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. Go Hawks!
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN.
710, politicians' biggest problem? It's Adam Andrzejewski. Adam Andrzejewski is here, and Adam, that may be the first time I pronounced your name accurately. Oh, wait a minute, how come we're not on the air?
With a name like Andrzejewski, it has to be good, right? Just like the old Smucker's commercial.
How many Christmas cards did you get from politicians this year?
Zero.
What? What a shock.
We mailed out about 5,000. We didn't get any in return.
That's amazing. Open the Book's new feature, their oversight report, Mapping the Swamp, a study of the administrative state. Explain.
So what we did, Steve, as you know, on a quarterly basis at OpenTheBooks.com, we give oversight to a tranche of federal data. Draining the swamp, with the party out of power, going all the way back to 1983 with Ronald Reagan, 2006 with Nancy Pelosi, the party out of power always claims they want to drain the swamp.
Right.
So what we did is we took a look at the 2 million disclosed federal civil service salaries and bonuses, and we literally mapped the swamp. We mapped that database by zip code, by their employer zip code. So now your listening audience, and it's very engaged, people are curious, they can come to openthebooks.com, click the graphic in the middle of the homepage, and they can literally search by zip code the federal bureaucracy, who by name, what they do by title, who employs them by agency, and what they make on salaries and bonuses in the last year of the Obama administration.
This is a federal study, not a state study.
But completely a federal study of the civil service workforce.
And again, so, this is the Obama last year, 2016.
Right. And what we found is it's very expensive to taxpayers. And to put that in perspective, it costs the American taxpayer $1.1 million a minute and $500 million a day. And we found...
Just to keep the government open?
Just to keep the civil service, the disclosed civil service workforce operating. And what we found now in 78 large federal agencies, and this was breaking information, that the average pay is now $100,000 and above. In fact, amongst the most highly compensated at $200,000 and above, the number of federal employees making that threshold has increased over the course of the past 6 years by 165%.
Wow.
It's maddening to hear. It's always maddening to hear. But you have to know. And that's the point of what you guys do all the time at Open the Books, whether it's a state study or a federal study. What kind of reaction have you gotten since you really started going on this stuff?
About 160,000 people have come to our website, and they've rendered about 750,000 searches on that interactive map.
Should make you feel good.
And it does. I feel really good about that. We were able to launch this study in a primetime interview on Fox News the day after Christmas. So a lot of people knew about it right away. We hope it leads to civil service reform.
Sure.
Because it's not only the salaries. You have bonuses, and you have paid time off benefits. Incredibly, if you hit your 3-year anniversary as a federal bureaucrat, you get 43 days of paid time off.
After 3 years.
So that's, well, that's just 8.5 weeks.
That's just like you driving to work this morning, isn't it? Don't you get 6 weeks off after 3 years? That's crazy.
well, and that's actually the reform, Steve. If the new administration would cut the paid time off back from 8.5 weeks, 43 days of paid time off, back to 6 weeks.
Yeah, I'm thinking 7 weeks. Yeah, you're right.
If you just cut it back to 6 weeks, you save taxpayers $5 billion a year.
And the numbers, too, 10 federal holidays, 13 sick days, 20 vacation days, those benefits cost us, the taxpayers, $22 billion plus dollars a year. That's
so this
maddening.
Is,
and many of those roll over, right?
Well, a portion of those, if you don't use them, do roll over from year to year.
Not if you're working at Tribune.
Well, that's true. Yeah, you don't use it, you lose it. Like, we lose it a lot.
But I think most companies don't use it, you lose it. I mean, people don't roll over. So, is this position or this program, this policy in place because it's in place? Because, you know, my constant harangue here is those who benefit most from the rules are the people that make the rules. So why would they change the rules?
And I think we have a lot of that going on at the federal level. And the paid time off, that's just a small portion of the overall package. You know, we talked about the new minimum wage for a federal bureaucrat in 78 agencies being a six-figure salary. Well, they also bonuses.
Minimum.
Well, it's average. Right, but it's so common. It's kind of like a new minimum wage.
Holy cow. And we all know people. I mean, I have friends who have parents who have, does this figure in too, who have worked for the city or the state or whatnot, taken another, retired because they were at able to collect their pension, and then taken another job, so basically can collect two, sometimes three pensions.
Yeah, we see that all the time here.
We're not counting the double dippers in this. This is just straight salary of the...
Oh, that makes us feel better.
All right, we'll come back and do more of this in a little bit here, because you need to know. Open the Books. The website again is?
So openthebooks.com.
And go there now. Click on that interactive map and watch your head explode. Adam Andrzejewski's here. More with him in a second.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Anna DeVlantis plays the horns on this as well. Very talented, very versatile. Adam Andrzejewski is here. OpenTheBooks.org, an interactive map to study the swamp that is the administrative state. You're the greatest party guest ever because you have so many anecdotes to tell. You just told us something about interior decorators off the air that will make your head spin. What is it?
So there's about 271 interior decorators and designers employed in the federal agencies. That line item alone costs the American taxpayer every single year about $30 million.
Can you believe that?
$30 million.
And each have their own interior decorator.
Well, the interior decorator, did you understand that there'd be a decorator at the White House? There'd be a decorator probably on the Hill.
Right.
You know, at the Capitol building. And where else do we need interior decorators?
So most of them, incredibly, are employed at Veterans Affairs. So, you know, over the course of the last couple of years, sick veterans can't get in to see a doctor because the VA claims they don't have the budget to hire enough doctors. Well, over the course of the past 4 years, just the line item for interior decorators has cost the VA budget $50 million.
Where's the money being spent at the VA? At the hospitals?
Well, the interior decorators, they manage, for instance, what we found is the high-end luxury art portfolio. So in a 10-year period, again, when 1,000 sick veterans died because they couldn't get in to see a doctor, and we were violating our sacred social bond of caring for our military warriors, the VA purchased $20 million of high-end art. Now, at the Palo Alto facility in California, they employ 9 interior decorators, and they purchased for a facility that serves blind veterans, they spent $700,000 on fancy sculptures.
Unless veterans are sculptures.
You missed this. I want people to hear this. Blind veterans was the primary service. The interior decorators decorating at a place that serves blind veterans.
And they purchased 2 sculptures, total price tag, $700,000.
That's why I said unless the veterans are making the sculptures for the facility, that would be the only reason that I could see spending that money, giving it back to them.
It's absolutely outrageous. Well, let me ask you this. Why are we investing so much in high-end art? Is this an investment strategy for the government, or what are we doing? What are we doing there?
Well, so we brought this forward in the summer of 2016, and our findings made Good Morning America and ABC World News Tonight. It was picked up by Senate Judiciary Chairman Chuck Grassley, who wrote an oversight letter to then-Secretary Robert McDonald at the VA. He then apologized and instituted new rules to stop this practice on a go-forward basis. But they did ignore our suggestion that veterans art should be displayed in veterans' medical facilities. That's common sense.
But why are they buying high-end art? Just period, why are they buying high-end art?
The VA makes an argument that it creates, quote, a healing environment.
Oh, my God, stop it. You could put dogs playing pool on the walls. They're going in to try to get health care.
Right. Absolutely.
Right.
Now, you know.
That's ridiculous.
Since we've come out with our report on mapping the swamp, I have heard from VA nurses. And VA nurses don't make a lot of money in the system. It is the largest single position on the number, on the position count in the entire federal system is our nurses. And all of this waste should be squeezed out and reallocated toward core sure. mission. And for instance, at the VA, that's actually healthcare of our veterans.
Better spending of money. I mean, come on. It's just exactly. common sense. Give me another one of the ones that'll pain me.
So we found in our data 35,000 lawyers. Uncle Sam loves lawyers. It goes right to the size, scope, and power of the administrative state.
Well, majority of Congress are lawyers.
That's true. And we took a look at who employs them in the federal agencies, and there are 12,000 of the lawyers employed pursuing crime and criminals over at the Department of Justice, but that leaves 23,000 lawyers. Two out of every three lawyers are by and large enforcing regulations.
Well, this is where you could make the argument that what Trump is doing could help, in fact, if that money is reallocated in proper ways. But 23,000 lawyers just dealing with the laws that are on the books?
By and large, enforcing regulations.
So they sit in offices and they wait for cases to come their way to see if it meets the standards of the law that was written.
And Congress, in large part, has punted a lot of their legislative duties, writing vague legislation that the rules need to be written by the agencies, and that does require lawyers. So enforcing regulations and actually writing the specifics into executable practices at the agencies, this is what many of the attorneys and lawyers are doing.
How do they, they have to come under fire at some point, I think, for bonuses, too, because there was another stat in the study that got me, the small federal agency in San Francisco. We're telling everyone what the director of human resources got. This is just the person in charge of processing payroll, right? Got as a bonus.
So the bonus line item last year in the federal budget was $1.5 billion. On top of the lucrative salaries, we think that this bonus bucket should be on the chopping block. We found a small federal agency, and Andrea, you identified it out in San Francisco, California. They only have 300 employees. These are not rocket scientists. They're not curing cancer out there. They're a land management agency. And last year, in the entire federal system, out of 2 million employees, the largest bonus of $141,000 went to their human resource manager.
That's a bonus.
It's ridiculous.
I could see $1,000 or $2,000, whatever it might be. $141,000 bonus.
Why hasn't there been, and I know this is your push, but why isn't there an annual departmental audit for wasted money?
Well, we're calling for congressional hearings on this agency. It's called the Presidio Trust. They manage since 1996. Congress gave them the authority to manage the former military base out there. It's some of the prettiest land in the entire country. It's a big plot of land. It's 5% of the entire land mass of the city of San Francisco. As a matter of fact, last year, three out of the top four bonuses in the entire federal system went to their employees. It was not only their human resource manager, but a realtor got an $80,000 bonus and a program manager got a $75,000 bonus. They have literally gamed the system for personal gain.
I'm quitting. Moving to San Bernardino.
Is the if I take a step back and said people mean well. Is there a lack of oversight or is there abuse? Which is greater, the lack of oversight or the abuse of the system?
Well, I think there's an abject lack of oversight, and especially on federal payroll practices.
But an abject lack of oversight could be a habitual problem with incompetence, or it could be intentional.
Well, let's take, for instance, the Government Accountability Office, the GAO,
right.
In 2016, they took a look at a study on what the federal bureaucrats, how they rate themselves in the system. And they found, incredibly, that 99.6% of the federal workforce is rated fully successful. And that's higher than the advertised purity of Ivory soap at 99.3%. It's impossible to have a workforce that's 99.6% fully successful.
There are people listening now that are going to work, and every year for their budgets, they have to account for every dollar. That's the way business works. So in the accounting for every dollar, there needs to be somebody above these departments where this abuse has habitually occurred to say no.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
Well, one of the line items that we found also that cost taxpayers over $500 million a year of total payroll cost is public affairs officers. There's 3,600 PR officers. It's the in-house federal agency spin machine. It's very expensive, and probably 8 out of 10 of those positions should be eliminated.
Right, because you could farm that business out and save millions and millions of dollars.
Well, we actually, in 2015, did a study. It wasn't even enough. The federal 122 federal agencies spent $2 billion with Madison Avenue, some of the world's most effective advertising companies, in addition to the in-house PR officer corps.
It's just outrageous. It's ridiculous. I don't know why we keep having you on.
I said Adam's one of my favorite guests. I always, you're so informative and explain everything so well, but just infuriating.
Well, there has to be transparency impact. So everybody
that's your goal, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Everybody listening needs to surf the map and then call your member of Congress and ask them what they have done to rein in the waste, the taxpayer abuse, and the bloat in the federal payroll.
Right. Because it's not the headline about how much the new tax bill costs if everybody else is paying their bills appropriately. Those who make the rules benefit most from the rules. Why would they change the rules? If you could fit it on a shirt, it would sell well. Adam, it's nice to see you. Give them the website again.
It's openthebooks.com. Steve, Andrea, thank you for having me in. It's always
nice
fun to be
you.
Here.
I'm telling you. Keep up the good work, you crazy nut you. By the way, I have a mathematical solution to the border problem, and I'm not kidding. Very common sense math problem that we'll tell you about in just a few minutes. And then Adam will work up a full study and my head will explode again. At 7:30, we need a quick break, right? And then back with headlines from Andrea on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
All right, 7:40, going along with the theme of the hour, wasting your tax dollars. Adam Andrzejewski opened the books. Yesterday, I'm driving along. I'm not bothering anybody. And I had a notion. It's funny. A texter just texted this, too. It reminded me of Dave. Remember the Kevin Klein movie, Dave, where the president's double sits down and he finds $500 million that's needed to pay for some, was it orphanages or old folks? Mm-hmm. So independent accounting is needed. But let's take politics off the table here, okay? And let's talk about what we know. What we know is, because he tweeted it out after the meeting yesterday, President Trump still wants his wall. That wall would cost, this is what they've asked Congress for, $18 billion. Mm-hmm. $18 billion is a lot of money. Now, follow the math. Let's say we don't spend $18 billion on the wall. How do we secure the border? A wall can't see, think, act, arrest, negotiate, communicate. A wall is a wall. You can get stuff over the wall. You can fly over the wall. It's certainly not a foolproof system at all. So actual border security. Here's what we know. The average border agent makes about $70,000 a year. There's about $30,000 in benefits, so each border agent costs taxpayers about $100,000. $18 billion at $100,000 would give us 180,000 new border agents.
Okay.
If you put them all on an 8-hour shift, you'd have 3 shifts per day. 3 shifts per day, 7 days a week, means we would have 60,000 new human man security positions along the border.
You just created 60,000 new jobs.
Now, if we can agree that $18 billion is a lot of money,
yes,
and if we agree that the wall would be about 900 miles, that's the most, by the way, the most you'll see is 700 to 900 miles. Let's say it's 900 miles.
Okay.
60,000 new security positions manned 24 hours a day, a new border guard every 8 hours, a new security agent every 8 hours means, this is my favorite part, we would have, instead of a wall, you would have a border guard for all 900 miles, one border guard every 71 feet.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
That's 25 yards.
How about that?
25 yards.
I thought you were going to say, because I was trying to figure out, they obviously can't make like a human chain holding hands, but I thought how far apart, maybe a mile?
75 feet. 25 yards is shorter than from where we're sitting in the Allstate Showcase Studio to Michigan Avenue. So I'm here, you're on Michigan Avenue, and we're guarding that area. Now, what if we don't spend all $18 billion? If we don't spend all $18 billion, let's say we spend $9 billion. $9 billion in that same program would give you 90,000 new jobs. Mm-hmm. And those 90,000 new jobs would stretch the line just a touch, but you would have a security agent in a new security position, a human being, every 50 yards.
Every 50 yards. Holy cow.
Well, let's cut it back even further. Let's say it's 45,000 new jobs. That's a lot of new jobs.
Yes, it is.
45,000 new jobs, man, 24 hours a day.
100
yards.
100 yards. A football field.
Every
literally
100 yards, you'd have a new agent. Instead of a wall, you get incredible security. You'd create all those new jobs. And again, you'd have a living, breathing human being that could see, think, act, arrest, negotiate, communicate, and more.
You need to call the president, because this is actually a really good idea.
Well, why aren't we thinking about stuff
I don't
like
know.
This?
But think of all those jobs you just created.
Well, here's the rest of it, right? What we know is, this is where it gets political. What we know is, under President Trump, and it could be a matter of timing, it could be because of the way he's handled things, it could be his rhetoric, we have 40% less people illegally coming across the border in the last year. That's a huge number. If we've dropped 40% without the wall, why are we spending $18 billion on the wall? Conservative news sites like The Blaze, writing just simple Google search, writing stories that the wall isn't needed. The Blaze is Glenn Beck's news site. You can see story after story from ex-border guards and from the union that represents the guards that maybe might have a biased viewpoint. Maybe they don't. They certainly know what they're talking about, that say the wall isn't needed. What's needed is more human beings.
Yep.
Now, the problem is, it's a tough job. It's a really tough job. And it's a tough job for people because it's dangerous. It's also incredibly boring because I think I was talking to Ross about this yesterday. Ross made the point, it's like the Secret Service. 99% of the time, you're not doing anything. And 1% of the time, it's really exciting and stressful.
Right.
So it's like that. It's like that. You're standing in the desert all day. And even though these border security guards generally work in 10-hour shifts, they're broken down to 8-hour shifts, so the math would make a little more sense. We only have about 36 miles of legitimate fencing and border now, mostly around San Diego and around bigger cities. But you could take that extra money if we didn't spend. Let's take the $4.5 billion figure, the 45,000 new jobs. You now have $13.5 billion to spend on what? To spend on technology.
Yep.
To spend on legislation cost. To change things like chain migration, which the president wants to change, and he's right to ask for that, and also to fix the lottery system so we could have some form of merit-based immigration. Or instead of bringing people into this country and training them at universities and kicking them out because they don't have the paperwork, we could actually have them stay, which is what they want to do, and benefit from their education, their knowledge, and all the expertise they bring.
Yeah, you could even argue use some of the extra money to pay for the path to citizenship.
Right. All of those costs
absolutely
are legitimate. How about this? What about this? What if we can't hire 45,000 new guards? What if 45,000 new guards to station one every 100 yards? What if we can't find them? Well, maybe we incentivize them. We could give every one of those 45,000 new guards a family vacation to Disney for $180 million.
Oh, my God.
We could give every one of those agents a brand new iPhone for $45 million. I'm talking about the 10, baby. I'm talking about the $1,000 iPhone. Or how about this? We could give every one of those new agents a brand new 2018 Chevy Traverse for $1.8 billion, which would still leave $11.7 billion to the good to spend on the rest of it. We don't need a wall. It's purely political. Let's stop talking about a wall and let's spend our money more intelligently. That's it.
Hashtag Cochran 2020.
That's it. That's it. That's what I'm talking about.
That's really good, though.
And think of the porta potty really industry. Good.
The porta potty industry. I hadn't even considered it.
You'd have to put all the porta potties out there for the workers.
I will admit, I haven't.
Be huge.
I haven't factored the porta potties.
Well,
and there's a cost to it, but obviously a cost benefit because of the business that sells you the porta potties.
That's right.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
I forgot to tell Joe we can shoot this bump. This was Mike, one of Mike's favorites. Whatever happened to Mike?
Mike.
Whatever happened to Jimmy DeCastro? Whatever happened to those people? By the way, some helpful listeners have chimed in. Now, keep in mind, the scenario I just laid out is to point out the absurdity of the situation. However, there's some workability here. And folks chimed in with, no, Steve, no. Salaries, you're charging us for 1 year. The wall is a one-time cost. Let's understand this. The cost of the wall at $18 billion is spread out in payments and building time mm-hmm. over 10 years. In other words, over those 10 years, you're not going to have security. No. Nothing's going to change. Your wall isn't going to fix things. So let me take you down to a position that maybe you're more comfortable with. That same period of time. Let's make it $1.5 billion spent in salary. I'm still going to get 15,000 new jobs, and I'm going to get a 24-hour staffed security position every 300 yards. That's every 900 feet.
Okay.
That's line of sight.
That is line of sight.
300 yards. I can see 300 yards. Now, $1.5 billion per year in salaries over the course of 10 years is $15
billion. Still, $3
billion less.
So
the 10 years that you're spending the $18 billion, I'm still hiring 15,000 people, and I'm paying them for 10 years, and I still got $3 billion for porta-potties. Huh? Right?
Right.
And, hello?
Right. And fridges and microwave ovens, anything you want to put in those little stands.
And we're not waiting for bidding, and we're not waiting for people to go, we need more spackle.
I like the jobs that you're creating, too.
Yeah, 15,000 new jobs.
And what if you incentivize, too, and hire citizens who have already applied for citizen, or rather residents who have applied for citizenship, then you're kind of then it's kind of win-win.
Yeah, so
you know, those who have
so it's interesting. So what you're saying is we would take people who are willing to come here to do the jobs Americans aren't willing to do to stop people from coming here to take those jobs
and pay taxes, right? Because they've already applied for temporary status.
That's
you
true.
Have to be a temporary resident for 5 years before you become a citizen.
Yeah.
And you're paying taxes, so they're actually paying into your program.
So in my worst case scenario, we have $3 billion to play with, and we have 15,000 new jobs, and we have security every 300 yards for the next 10 years.
I'm going home.
Good deal.
Good stuff.
Show's over. Speaking of the iPhones, as I was a second ago, Sandberg, come in here for a second. Sandberg's mom got an iPhone yesterday.
I think this is great. I can't wait to hear this story.
And I understand it was nothing but trouble. Sandberg, is that accurate?
That would be pretty much accurate. My parents both had Samsungs or, you know, Android phones.
Whoa. Don't poo-poo on the Android.
Oh, no, I know.
I'm an Android guy.
And so for a year and a half, I think my mom's phone that she's had was for the last 5 years. So she's been, it had gotten to the point in the last year and a half where it was useless because it needed to be plugged in the whole time. I was trying to meet her at a store one day because I happened to be out by her, and her phone, it kept dying because the battery life was awful. Like, so she needed this new phone. So she's been talking about what she calls the Apple phone for a year and a half.
The Apple phone?
The Apple phone. And so finally the decision was made, we're going to get mom a new phone, and it's going to be an Apple phone. So they went and got it, and then going from Apple to Apple is very easy. New iPhone, everything transfers, you know. But the Android, as you know, because you have an Android, there's mm-hmm. some quirks and things that...
But has she ever messed around with an iPad?
No.
So she really doesn't have the learning curve. Because, you know, you Apple people,
yes.
Your argument is it's so easy. Well, it is.
It
is easy. I've had iPads for years. So I'm multi-platform.
Yeah, she's never touched an iPad, so she
doesn't know the Apple system.
No, and even it seems to me that everything is on the opposite side. The volume buttons, you know, like everything is flipped
from your phone.
Yeah, from because I have an iPhone. So
I don't know. My Android makes sense. Your iPhone doesn't.
My parents, my dad likes to think he knows everything, you know what? It's just I think that's one of the things. So my dad, you know, thinks they're going to set this thing up. Aside from being at the store, in the store they did some of it, but some of the things, you know, still need. When you go home, you got to set the Wi-Fi and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called them to try to, they put me on speakerphone, and I was trying to coach them through the Wi-Fi setup. And my dad doesn't really want the help because he thinks he knows, but he doesn't know. And I, you know, I said, well, it'll find the Wi-Fi, and then you'll have to enter the password. I've never had to enter a password. There is no password.
Yes, Dad, there is.
I'm pretty sure there's a password.
Yes,
and then I can
system.
Hear him, and I can tell he's getting under the desk in the office to look at the tower, his Wi-Fi tower, for the password.
Yeah, the password that's on the thing.
Right. And so I was like, hey, just for a tip, I always take a picture of that so you don't have to get under a desk. And he's like, I got it, you know. And I said, why don't you read it to mom so she can enter, you know, because it's hard to look at those little numbers. And
plus, she would have practice in doing the stuff she needs to know on her phone.
I've got it. I've got it. It says not valid. And then he enters again, and then it took, you know. So, and then I'm trying to explain swiping on the screen. And, you know, your thumbprint, it has a thumbprint read. And my mom is, it's not working, whatever. So, long story short, she has to come to my house. Yeah. Because I was not able to tell these two over speakerphone how to do every function.
And did it sound like the Costanzas?
They call themselves the Costanzas. They were bickering at each other. Oh, and your father thinks he knows everything. And then he's like, I do not, Debbie. And, you know, while I'm trying to say, hold your thumb over the thing. And
repeatedly to make the thumbprint. Right.
And so my mom comes over, and then watching her, I've never seen anyone less natural at touching a device. She was not using her thumb. She was using her pointer finger and trying to do, like, I'm like, why do you even use that finger? Well, it's the finger I've always used.
It's the technology generation gap.
Yeah, she's a two-hand, she doesn't text and drive or anything like that, so she's not developed any one-handed phone skills, which I know is...
Which is good.
We're not supposed to be doing that, but it would be helpful in, she can't maneuver. The phone is kind of designed to work with one hand, except for if you don't know how to move your thumb across a screen.
Well, I mean, I feel your pain to some degree. However, when my mother, I got my mother Alexa for Christmas. Okay. And I'm going to go over to her house. I volunteered to go today, but she had other plans. I'm going to go over to her house to set up her Alexa. However, she's more than willing to admit she doesn't know what she's talking about with that stuff.
Well, that's good. My mom will. My father, he thinks he knows or has been able to set things up in the past. So he
there is a male. I get that on some level. I get that because there's a male ego portion of this going. Just give me it. I'll do it. And we don't need to look at instructions. We'll just figure it out.
Yeah, that's in my sister. She said, what are you doing? I said, mom's coming over because I need to help her with the phone. And she's like, oh, God, thank God it's you and not me.
Because, now we need to get your mom on Facebook.
Oh no. Katie has banned her from Facebook.
Oh, no.
This could actually be a good text question, right? I don't know what the actual question is, but we'll figure it out by tomorrow. And a text question is what? Well, my parents make me crazy or... Because.
You know what that's
my
like?
My parents think the iPhone does this and it doesn't do that.
That's like reverse banning. You know how you ban your kids because you don't want
them banning the parents.
Right.
You're banning
my sister has told them long ago they can't go on Facebook.
Senior banning.
We need
poor
another break.
Debbie. I feel bad for her.
Oh,
Joe, sounds like another? Me. I feel terrible.
Okay, it does, yeah.
All right, we got to take a quick break. We'll come back with the news of Steve next on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me good.
We go live to Channel 9. Dean Richards, hello.
Good morning.
Hold on, the band is very loud. Dean? Dean!
Good morning.
Dean!
Hello.
Hello, Dean!
Test one,
two. Oh, there you are.
One, two, test. Hello.
You think after 30, 35 years of doing this, I'd know what to do with these buttons.
All the buttons will be different soon. It doesn't matter.
I didn't know we'd have new buttons. Yeah, well, of course we'll have new buttons. We're moving.
That's right. It's going to be a mattress store in the Showcase Studio soon.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that.
Or a Starbucks.
Because there are hardly any mattress stores or Starbucks anywhere. Yeah. So
imagine if they combined.
There's one on Michigan Avenue.
There's only one mattress store you need anyway. Mattress Firm, thanks for the setup.
That's very true.
All right, so I've got several things to get to here, and I just don't know where to start. So let me give you the list, and you can tell me what your top item is. We've got sexual assault news, an imbalance in Hollywood pay, Oprah stories, French actress stories, a famous one, by the way, the Grammys, home video for January, and kooky James Franco. I don't even know what the top story is.
I was just looking at some clips of some new things that are on Netflix, like Love Actually.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Where I'm just looking at it, I'm going, oh.
It's a great movie.
Oh. And then Sharknado 5.
Oh. Not so great.
Oh.
More like
David Letterman's new talk show. It's going to be debuting on Netflix January 12th.
Who's doing the interviewing? Is it Dave or the beard?
It's the beard.
Yeah. It's keeping the beard?
It's the beard. There's actually a mouth on the beard now, and it talks. And we'll be interviewing a single guest for a full hour. Barack Obama is his first guest. But Jerry Seinfeld is moving his Drinking Coffee with Comedians show to Netflix. So that's going to be new in January. New Frankie and Grace season is beginning in January on Netflix. All of the Godfather movies, all of the Lethal Weapon movies, all of the Batman movies on Netflix for January. Breakfast at Tiffany's and Caddyshack among some of the highlights this month.
So that Netflix thing really seems to catch on.
Seems to be catching on.
Seems to be working out okay.
The kids seem to be loving it.
You know the old story about the Netflix founder? He had executive experience and he tried to get a job at Blockbuster Video and they we're not interested. So he went out and started Netflix.
I don't know if you ever thought about this, but back in the day I thought I should get me some kind of video store franchise. That is a million-dollar idea. Yeah. I would be a millionaire if I had one of these video store franchises. Another great idea that Dean Richards had that would have gone completely belly up had I acted on it.
Well, you remember, you go back to a decade I call the 90s.
Yeah.
Because that's what it was called, the 90s. Through, what, 2005-ish, probably? Video stores on every corner.
Yeah. Every single corner. Not only the big ones, the big chains, but little independent ones.
And you'd go into the video store and you'd wander around and then you'd have disagreements about what movie you were going to get.
Go behind the black curtain for certain. Oh, wait.
Try to pretend like, look around, make sure that nobody knew who you were when you went behind that black curtain.
Mm-hmm. Right, mm-hmm. Right.
That's where they kept the comedies.
And then sometimes you weren't kind. You didn't rewind. remember they all had the Be Kind Rewind stickers? Right.
A dollar charge if you didn't rewind.
Well, how many movies did you forget to bring back?
Tons.
So Andre did some hard prison time for a couple of those.
I still have. So I actually found a movie that I rented in college when I graduated and moved and then moved again. So mm-hmm. 5+ mm-hmm. years later. Yep. That's Rentertainment. Sorry, guys. In Champaign, I still have...
You're the reason that business went belly up.
I still have Citizen Kane.
You may have destroyed the entire industry.
Kane. I do. I took a movie
Citizen
class.
Citizen Kane.
I do.
Yeah, sure.
That must have been a nice light. Light Friday night. Was it Citizen Kane or Citizen Candy Kane?
Behind that black curtain. Someone told me there were comedies behind there, Dean.
Dean will come back with all those stories.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richards, the entertainment editor. Channel 972. Oh, 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 oh.
Back to Dean. I just tried to talk to you with my microphone off.
He's always ready.
I heard you.
Coast to the west.
It's a little tough to do. Speaking of comedy, Dean, cheap plug time. John DeCoste and I, along with the great Larry Reeb.
Is this New Year's Eve?
No, this is Saturday, January 20th.
Oh, that's a lot sooner.
Saturday, January 20th, we'll be at the Metropolis in Arlington Heights.
Oh, that's a nice place.
It's a great theater. Box office number 847-577-2121 or metropolisarts.com. And always, it's a Nice Man production.
What day is that?
Saturday, January 20th. Have you made up an excuse why you can't go yet?
Not yet, but I'm working on one.
All right.
You know what? That's the day of the Women's March. So you could go to the march and then go to the comedy show at night. Make a whole day of it with the family.
How about make a whole day of it with the ladies?
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Speaking of,
yeah, we've got
a lot of stories related. There's almost all stories have to do with...
Well, let's start with the lady named Oprah.
Well, that's the one story. Well, she is a lady, but it's not a sexual assault. Yes. You know, we saw her on the Golden Globes the other night.
That was it.
And Steve, we'd appreciate it from now on if you would call her President Winfrey instead of by her first
name. I don't
name.
Think people have gone nuts enough yet, do you?
Just to show a little respect for this landslide movement that's apparently happening. So she, she's like super, the speech was beautiful, and she was super beautiful and elegant and all that. And then yesterday, just a complete juxtapose. Shoots an Instagram video outside of her home in Montecito, California, where she's sludging through the mud. Her house completely surrounded by mudslides and all the mess that is going on in that part of California right now. The wildfires are continuing. The rainstorms are going crazy there. And Oprah, President Winfrey, walking, going through the mud and, dealing with all this.
Showing she's a woman of the people.
Showing that she is one with the people. She Instagrammed and said that her house in back is gone.
Wow.
That would probably be the one that's five times bigger than my house.
Wow.
And that she is praying for her Santa Barbara community there.
Well, there's still a ton of missing people.
There are.
Awful.
Yeah, there's
dozens.
Like 31 people dead from that. They're using, in serious, they're using Oprah's property there as a launch, you know, as an area for helicopters, rescue helicopters that have been, you know, dropping people down on wires, rescue workers down on wires to get people out of the area because it's so ravaged there.
Yeah, 13 people already killed, 160 others injured. Mm. And as you said, Dean, still many, many, many missing.
Who is against the Me Too movement? Who has stepped out and said that it's not for me?
It is the legendary French actress Catherine Deneuve.
Mm.
She actually, there's quite a few people in France that have signed an open letter there saying that they are opposing the Me Too movement, saying that it is repressive. What Catherine Deneuve said in the French newspaper Le Monde, mm-hmm. She said that rape is a crime, but flirting incessantly and clumsily is not.
That's not what anybody's talking about.
She says that chivalry is not a machismo aggression, and all of this is inhibiting sexual freedom.
That's a complete misstatement of what's going on. Really is.
It is.
Yeah. Catherine Deneuve. By the way, I subscribe to a different French paper. It's, I don't even know how to spell it, but that's what it says on the masthead. We have a pay inequity story that's pretty remarkable. Talk about that.
Well, you would think, you know, with all this talk of gender equality right now that, you know, if there were things that happened in the past, they certainly would have been corrected. So, you know, recently they had to go and reshoot part of the movie All the Money in the World, mm-hmm. because Kevin Spacey was in it.
Everybody worked for free, right?
When he, when his sexual problems...
His peccadillos.
excuse the expression. You keep your peccadillo to yourself.
That's part of the problem for him.
When his allegation problems all came to the world, they cut him out of, literally cut every single scene that he was in out of this movie and reshot it with Christopher Plummer. But that meant bringing Mark Wahlberg and Michelle Williams back to reshoot those scenes as well.
So I would assume the only people that got paid were the crew.
Well, it was the crew, it was Mark Wahlberg, and it was Michelle Williams. About 10 days of work. The Washington Post is reporting that Mark Wahlberg got $2 million for those 10 days of reshoots.
Wow.
And that Michelle Williams was paid a few $100,000.
Okay, that's insane. For the same shooting schedule.
Right.
So basically. Yeah.
So she said, I'll take the union. And by the way, the union minimum is because you're working. The union has an issue if you work without being paid. So the union minimum, it sounds like that's probably what she got, right?
I don't know the particulars of the negotiation with it, but she was the one that was nominated for a Golden Globe for this movie.
Hmm. And it's not Mark Wahlberg's fault that he got the money.
No, it's not Mark Wahlberg's fault, but you think of, I don't know if it's directly Ridley Scott, the director's issue, or I'm guessing it probably was more related to producers. They handled the business side. Yeah. Of the movie.
And he had a lot of leverage. He said, well, if we really want Mark to come back, we're going to have to pay.
That may be the case, but, you know, certainly it seems like if you're going to bring back two pretty big A-listers, you're going to pay them the same thing.
Yeah, I would agree.
What's going on there?
We have some other sexual assault news.
These are the new allegations from yesterday. Two new allegations against rap mogul Russell Simmons. The one that was the shocker yesterday was Marvel Comics co-founder Stan Lee.
Oh, boy.
He has been accused by some of the nursing staff at the retirement home at which he lives. The nursing home staff there says that he demanded sex from them, that he groped them, and is consistently walking around naked.
Well,
95 years old. Lee's attorneys categorically denying all of the allegations, said they will fight to protect his stellar good name and impeccable character.
We talked before about what hotel hospitality crews go through, but I don't know that anybody's talked about nurses. Can you imagine what female nurses go through on a regular basis?
And I would think at nursing homes, at assisted living, facilities, you know, those kinds of places. Haven't there been stories where social diseases are flourishing?
Oh, yeah, after Viagra became a thing.
Yeah, in those kinds of situations where, you know, in many cases, the filter is gone.
What do you think Grandpa's smiling about?
Yeah.
What? Me too.
You want to get Grandma something for Christmas she can really use? Get her track shoes.
God, that's awful.
It's awful.
Well, I don't know why you guys are laughing.
That's awful.
And finally,
did you read that in your French newspaper? because they would carry a story like that.
What's going on at the Grammy Hall of Fame?
Grammy Hall of Fame announced 3 new inductees. I couldn't be more delighted. Neil Diamond is going to be inducted this year.
Cracklin' Rose, get on board.
The group Queen.
Easy come, easy go. How about that?
Okay, thanks.
Your turn.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche.
I was trying to do any song but that. What's the third one?
Tina Turner.
Oh.
Loves me some Tina Turner.
Proud Mary. Yeah, Proud Mary.
Oh, yeah, Tina Turner. Best concert I've ever been to, by the way.
Me too.
Tina Turner.
Tremendous. But, you know, it's certainly top five for me, but I saw Tina Turner and Bob Seger together.
Wow.
Talking about a great concert.
We talked yesterday about Tina Turner, Dean, and how Oprah was in the front row when she came.
Oh, right.
And I was in
President Winfrey?
Yes, President Winfrey. And yeah. I was in the back row, like the very tippy-top row of the United Center. So we were like bookending the concert, basically.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah.
I was at that show. I remember most of the time I was watching Oprah and her entourage, which was pretty much the entire floor of the United Center.
Oh, you saw Oprah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've seen her big, gigantic shows, which are fantastic. But right before the song "What's Love Got to Do with It" came out, she wasn't that popular before "What's Love Got to Do with It."
Mm-hmm.
Her popularity waned, and she was playing smaller places. And I had the opportunity. This must have been 1983, 1984. Saw Tina Turner at the Park West.
Oh, man,
tiny little club.
How great is that?
Kind of her comeback.
Sandberg, did you see Tina Turner?
I've seen Tina Turner, but my mom broke her ankle doing charades to Proud Mary.
No.
Yep. While we were on vacation.
That's awesome.
One year.
Sorry,
Big
Mrs.
Wheel,
Sandberg.
Keep on turning. Crack.
Somebody got it. They said Proud Mary, and she started jumping up and down and broke her ankle.
It was probably to the doo doo doo.
There may have been cocktails involved.
It's the standard charades injury. And
sometimes you take that lyric a little too seriously, and sometimes I like to do it a little rough.
All right, we don't have time for the Franco audio, but James Franco's in trouble too?
Well, this is so complicated because during the Golden Globes, Ali Sheedy from The Breakfast Club started posting tweets about James Franco. That sort of implied that there may have been something wrong, but it's not really 100% clear that there was. This is what Ali Sheedy tweeted while James Franco was getting his Golden Globe. Her first tweet was, "James Franco just won. Please never ask me why I left the film TV business." And then later in the broadcast, she tweeted, "Okay, wait. Bye. Christian Slater and James Franco at a table on Golden Globes. Hashtag me too." And then their third tweet, "Why is a man hosting? Why is James Franco allowed in? Said too much. Night. Love you."
Okay, first off.
So we're not, we don't even know what any of that means, right?
No, and the thing is, I mean, you know, obviously if she went through something, that's awful. But don't say, "Don't ask me," and then tweet three times and then throw out the other. She obviously wants to talk about it.
Absolutely.
Before the night was over, Sheedy had taken all three of the tweets down. But it's left a lot of questions. What was she talking about?
Right.
And they don't know. And last night on Stephen Colbert, James Franco was on talking, responding to that, saying he has no idea what she's talking about, that he directed her in a play. And, you know, but in his mind, everything was fine and nothing unusual happened. What was not addressed directly on Colbert last night is some other allegations that have come out that are sexual in nature. And James Franco did say in the interview last night regarding the other tweets, I assumed that he was talking about those, that he is denying that anything ever happened, but he doesn't want to shut anybody down and their right to say whatever they want to say.
Yeah, and wouldn't you think, too, if the Ali Sheedy thing had no legs, that he would have picked up the phone and called her Monday?
Right, and said, "I'm sorry."
And said, "Well, sorry," or said, "What are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
About?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, or does he want to throw kerosene on the fire also? I don't know.
Is that his new movie, Kerosene on the Fire?
He's so weird.
That is. He plays the kerosene.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye.
And headlines next. I want to welcome John Coyle in studio. John's a friend of the show and an Olympic silver medalist in the 5,000-meter relay. I got the bronze that year. And, John, welcome back, man.
Thank you.
That microphone. Nice to see you. You also may know John as an NBC sports analyst and an author. And what else are you up to?
These days, I'm just finishing up a book, actually.
What's the new book? Can you tell me, or would you have to kill me?
Yeah, no, I can tell you. It's called Design for Strengths, and it's about the intersection of something called design thinking, a method of creative problem solving, and that and how to lead a life based on your strengths.
Your mind is such, you know, I can't think of the player, Dave, you may know, but there's an NFL lineman who is a math genius, and he had to make a decision. He was featured.
Yeah, no, he played at Penn State.
What's his name?
His offensive lineman.
Yeah.
And he went to, he left the NFL to go pursue his academic career.
Because he was concerned about CTA and messing up his beautiful mind, but he's back.
John Urschel?
He went back to
John Urschel. That's the guy.
Went back to work. When you're an incredibly bright guy and you spend the time and commitment you spend on sports, is there less of a draw to go back at it in your second life after you retire?
Well, you kill a lot of brain cells, so. No, I mean, it's a hard transition out of being an athlete, so finding somewhere else to put your energies is.
Yeah, but you almost seem like you're interested in everything. So does that help?
It does, and that's probably true, yes.
Yeah. All right, so I want to ask you about the Olympics, obviously, but if people want to follow all the things you're up to, what's the best way to do that?
Just johnkcoyle.com.
Okay, yeah, check the website out all the time. All right, Olympic silver medalist in 94. What was that Olympics known for? Have you seen I, Tanya?
I have. Would you like to hear my Tanya story?
Yes.
Absolutely.
So I'll just tell it the way it happened.
Okay.
PC aside. So the first time I met Tanya, she was naked, and so was I.
How did that happen?
Really?
Yeah, it's true story.
How did that happen?
So in the Olympic Village, they have a room.
Said. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And I can explain about all the condoms as well later.
Yeah, the bowls.
In the Olympic Village, there's a room for physical therapy. You can go in and get a massage 24/7.
Ah.
And so in the physical therapy room, there are beds for massage, and there's two beds per TV. So it was like maybe 60 beds, 30 pairs, 30 TVs, right? So you walk in any time of the day, and you go into the changing room, put on a towel, you walk out, and magically somebody appears, right? So I'm there getting a massage, and I'm watching the coverage of the Olympics on the TV. I hear some shuffling to the right of me. I know somebody's laying down in the bed next to me, but my head was facing the other way. I didn't see who it was. I fast forward a little bit, and massage therapist has me, you know, sort of turn. So I look, and I see a blonde bob of hair, but I still don't really know who it is. And then this thing happens where the TV switches and announces breakthrough announcement in the Tanya Harding Jeff Galluli affair. Appears Tanya may have had a role or at least known about, and her head swivels and our eyes lock.
Oh,
and I freak out, right? Like I'm like a voyeur into her personal nightmare, so I'm gonna pretend I didn't hear
right,
her
I'm
or see her.
Right.
So I start to swivel my head, and she literally reaches out like this and says, no, turn it up, I want to hear this. No shame whatsoever.
Wow.
Really?
Wow. And you probably saw a little bit of guilt before any of the rest of us knew it.
Well, you know, it was a pretty big story going in, so we all kind of knew what was going on, and we train and compete on the same ice as them, so I'd see her every day. I was right there when she had the whole skate mishap. I mean, I was literally like 30 feet away. So
it's a good story.
I guess, what was the reaction by yourself and the rest of the athletes, too, while this is going on? Did you guys see this as a huge distraction, or were you guys like, whoa, you know, turn it up?
We found it amusing and slightly irritating just because it distracted from, like, real competition, at least in our minds. But
and also, you guys were asked about something you had nothing to do with after a lifetime of preparing for your event.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, Tanya and Dave's mom apparently were the big stories of that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's right.
Dave, do you remember what it felt like being in the Lillehammer then? Because I know you covered those games.
I do, and actually, I was covering speed skating, but I was walking down the main drag in the town we were in, Hamar, and I walked past Tanya Harding, who was, I mean, it was just one of those things where she's coming one way, I'm coming the other
and
way.
She hit you in the leg with a black pipe.
No, she was eating popcorn. That's the thing that I remember. It was weird. I was going to get some reindeer sausage somewhere.
John and I were just talking off the air a moment ago. If you see I, Tanya, which Andrea and I both really liked.
Excellent.
You had an emotion in watching it, like, this is ridiculous, and then you went, wait, no, that's exactly what the sport is.
Yeah, I mean, if you do the fact check on that movie, it feels so over the top and so, like, made up, and then you read everything, and and the whole movie is true. It all happened.
I don't know, and I asked you about this off the air, too. As big a redneck as she was in the upbringing that she had, for her to make a breakthrough in a sport filled with, in quotes, princesses, and people who are pretty judgmental folks to begin with. It's pretty crazy. I mean, she was a great athlete.
I mean, she was super talented. She was the first one to land a triple axel for years. I mean, it took half a decade, I think, before anybody else did it. She should have been a short track speed skater.
She would have killed there, right?
Yeah, totally.
Holy cow. You're right, though, because at the end of the movie, they show snippets, video clips of the actual, you know, the guy who was Jeff, the bodyguard, and then the mom, and they were over the top. But that being said, as far as the training goes, when you're young, I know not everyone has.
What are you calling Coyle old now?
No, but when you're you have to start at a very young age. Is the training has to be that intense? Not with an abusive mother like hers, but you had to have your father or your mom or someone in your ear kind of going, get up and go to the gym, kind of helping motivate you.
For sure, and I think, you know, from my experience, it kind of comes in two flavors: the supportive parents that allow you to chase your dream, which is the kind of parents I had, effective, and then. Just as effective, or maybe even more, is the parent that withdraws their love based on your performance.
Wow.
And you see it again and again. Yeah. I mean, and it's super effective.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, think about it. What's the one thing kids want more than anything else?
Affirmation.
Right.
Yeah.
From their parents.
Wow. John's going to South Korea. We'll talk about that in a second. And whether or not he had a run-in on a massage table with Kim Jong-un. It's 8:50.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720
WGN Chicago.
Sale TV joins us in just a few minutes. Thank you for listening and for watching. John K. Coyle here. There's only one Olympian in the studio, John. It's you. Where's your silver medal?
It is in a drawer at home right now.
Okay. Is it insured?
No.
Really? Surprising me.
Yeah, no.
Do you take it out much anymore?
You know, I started bringing it to my talks when I give speeches.
Oh, you should.
And so I hand it out. It's gotten a little beat up because it's been dropped a few times, but, you know, that's the price you pay, right?
Now, you're going to South Korea.
I am.
All right. And you working for NBC?
I'm not working. This will be the first games I'm not working for NBC.
You're actually going to be able to enjoy the Olympics?
I'm going to have a lot of fun.
Have you ever been over there?
I've never been to Korea.
Are you concerned about the tension?
I'm not. No.
A lot of people feel that because North Korea is now sending a delegation, that any nonsense that Kim Jong-un would try to pull, he wouldn't now. But you have to keep in mind, John, he did kill his own half-brother.
Yes, he did.
And his uncle.
Yeah. No, I think he's crazy, but he's crazy in a very predictable way, right? He wants to retain his power. So anything that would usurp that possibility, I think, he's not going to do those kinds of things.
We're all hockey nuts around here. The games have changed this time around because the NHL is not sending their players over. So it's not just the United States fielding amateurs. Allegedly, all the other countries will have amateurs as well. But it's not just hockey. The big story, obviously, is Russia's not going.
Right. Oh, my God. Yeah. So crazy. I don't know if you remember, in Sochi, the U.S. speed skating team, long track in this case, came away without a single medal.
Yep.
And we went into those games 2 weeks before we had a World Cup. And in that World Cup, we won 16 medals, and Russia won 12. And 2 weeks after the Olympics, we went to World Cup. By the way, the events are exactly the same. And we went to World Cup 2 weeks after the Olympics, and we won 15 medals, and Russia won 12. At the Olympics, Russia won 26, I believe, and we won exactly zero.
Todd, it was in Russia, too. What a crazy coincidence,
right?
That's just so weird. Speaking of speed skating, handicap it for us. Who are the countries to watch?
In short track or long track?
Well, both.
I mean, short track is always Korea. It's their number one sport. It's already sold out. It sold out the day the tickets went for sale.
It's just fun.
It is. It's the. I mean, I'm biased, but I think it's the most fun sport to watch. You got Canadians are super strong. The U.S. team for the men holds the world record and just won the World Cup for the relay. So we've got a great shot in that event. J.R. Selsky is skating well. We've got John Henry Kruger as well. Women's team's not as strong. We don't have a relay for women. They fell, I believe, in the Worlds last year where you qualify.
Wow.
Long track, we've got a whole host of really strong skaters and a great shot at a bunch of medals, particularly with the women. Actually, in the 500 and 1,000, and then, you know, the super powerhouses. There are Russia yet again.
In many cases, I mean, in pretty much every case, you're the American dream. You went to the Olympics, you medaled. What would you say to young Olympic hopefuls?
I would say that attending the Olympics, and particularly if you were able to take home a medal, it is the gift that keeps giving. I mean, that's 24 years ago almost, and it still opens doors. Well, I'll tell you a quick story. So I'm sitting in the USA House. This is a little enclave they have in every Olympics where you can be, if you're an Olympian, they don't say former, but current or previous.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there with Brett Hadekam, Christy Yamaguchi's husband, and also a three-time Stanley Cup winner. And he's sort of mulling over his beer, and he says to me, you know, I have three Stanley Cup trophies, and nobody cares. But they find out that we are in the Olympics, and they're all excited. Right. And then it was sort of like on cue. The doors open, like the lights get brighter, and in walks Mike Ruzioni. And spontaneous standing ovation.
And that's 35 plus years later.
And he goes, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Right.
How about
so
that?
So cool. Because that'll always be your moniker before your name, Olympic medalist.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And by the way, the gold medalist was ahead of you by how much in time?
A huge margin, as it turns out, in this case. It was, I think, 1.2 seconds, which is a large amount.
Yeah.
Now, let me give you another stat from the sport, because time really matters. In 2002, the 500 meters, the difference between gold and silver, after a lifetime of training, two 100s, the difference between first to 10th. So, gold medal heroes welcome, or sent back to Siberia for four more years because we got 10th place in the Olympics, 31 100ths of a second.
That's incredible.
Oh, jeez.
Isn't it better to lose by a second and a half?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And by the way, it's 1.2, Steve. Don't call it 1.5. Dave.
Yeah, it's like the time it takes to take a breath.
Yeah.
That can be the difference.
That's how I got my red light camera ticket, because it was 1.3 seconds that I didn't stop for.
There you go.
It's true.
Will we have a dominant speed skater, long track, again, from the U.S.? I mean, like an Eric Heiden or Bonnie Blair on the women's side. And there have been many greats over the years.
Yeah, not right now, I don't think. Mm-hmm. We don't have anybody that's consistently winning everything. But, you know, they come and go. I mean, Shawnee Davis was certainly dominant for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Just made his fourth team. But he's not likely to medal unless something magic happens between now and then. But we'll never have another Eric Heiden. I mean, that's the equivalent of Usain Bolt winning the 200.
That's a great point.
And then going on to win the 400, the 800, the 1500, the 5K, and the 10K. Like, that's never going to happen. It shouldn't ever happen.
Or Phelps.
Yeah, it's a Phelps on ice. With Russia not involved, do the medals mean less?
I don't think so. No, okay. I don't think so at all. I mean, sure, there's maybe in hockey it's going to be a little different, but the other sports, it's super competitive at every level, and everybody goes there ready to fight it out to win. So I don't think it changes anything.
There's a couple cool skiing competitions too. What's the skiing thing? It's like a race.
The ski jump.
The snowcross.
Oh yeah.
I love snowcross. Is probably my favorite sport outside of short track.
Bananas.
You know,
what's the one where
it's conflict? Right. There's actual contact. It's, you know. Yeah.
What's the one where they
races.
Ski and then they drop and they shoot?
That's biathlon.
Yeah, that's so cool too, isn't it?
I can't imagine having your heart rate pegged to like 200 and then trying to shoot a rifle.
Right? Yeah, it's insane. It's great seeing you. I hope we can bother you again for more stuff
course,
to talk about.
Of course.
It's great to see you. Give the website out again.
JohnKCoyle.com.
JohnKCoyle.com. How many silver medals in the studio? Raise your hand. Oh, that's right. Mm. Just one. But Dave, you were good. You were good.
I mean,
calling the racer.
See, you didn't have to say anything. You could have just let it hang there.
I
could have let it hang there.
We were good calling the race.
It's 9:02. We got to get to the news. We'll do that in a moment on 720 WGN. And hi to everybody on CLTV.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
9:14. And man, how great is Coyle? John K. Coyle.
So
what
awesome.
A good dude.
Those
silver medalist.
Stuff. Yeah. Looks like he could still skate, too.
He's in great shape.
I love his stories, too. His
I felt
backstory.
Bad, too, because I missed on the handshake.
What do you mean?
You know that awkward thing where you go to shake somebody's hand?
Oh, no.
I only got his fingers.
Oh.
And you don't go for the re-grip.
No, you could do a do-over.
Well,
on that.
You don't really go for the re-grip. You just go, next time.
It's too bad because he had a nice strong handshake.
That's why he rolled his eyes walking out of the studio.
Did he?
Yeah.
Geez, now I feel even worse. But I'll give you the example. Here, go to shake my hand.
All right. Okay.
Just go to shake my hand. Oh.
Oh.
See, it's almost okay.
James, you want to do the
it's almost okay if you were.
I've done it.
If you're female.
Yeah.
Because it almost seems like I'm going to kiss your hand.
Right.
But a dude, you don't grab a dude's hand no. like that.
No, you do it more like.
You get in and grab it. But get
just
over
like
there.
That. Get over here.
That's it.
Come
right
here, you
there.
Old so-and-so.
Right there. And you know what? You know what? In the Zapruder film of that handshake, they've just explained in his motion how it happened. It's Coyle's fault.
Yeah.
Coyle, geographically in the handshake, started to bat. It sounds like a Seinfeld bit. Coyle started to back up.
Why do guys... Can I just ask? Like, so you guys went to greet each other, right? Yeah. So Dave starts to lean in. Why do you guys have to pound each other so hard on the back?
Because we're dudes.
Oh, all right. Yes. Because women go, hi.
Well, it's also changed, too, because there didn't used to be a dude hug or a bro hug.
Right,
I mean, that's sort of become a thing. I mean, you shook hands or you high-fived or you slapped hands.
So it's okay to
you never hugged.
But there's unwritten rules, too. Not more than three pats on the back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually one, two, break.
Or just one big boom, right?
Yeah, you can do that as well.
Because that's kind of what Dave just did to you.
Yeah. But the firm handshake is a signal of, you know, your masculinity.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
As opposed to the dead fish handshake.
The dead fish handshake in a man, not good.
Do you know, someone said...
It's not good in a woman.
Someone said the other day, because now with cold and flu season, and some of us are a little more germophobic than the others, so I'm constantly hit with the Purell. There should be a universal greeting where you don't have to touch.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's Sandberg's rule.
I like that.
Yeah, don't touch,
liking, especially
don't
now.
Touch other people.
Cold, flu season, you don't know.
We don't all touch each other very often.
How about just a nod?
I touch
head.
You guys. I give you hugs.
This is still a huggy culture here.
I hug a lot.
Yeah, it is a huggy culture. I will say this, that, you know, what we do in the case of Sandberg, she actually has a safety circle around her. Like you can't approach her within 5 feet.
It's like chalk.
Yeah. Like if you could say, it's not visual, but it's almost like police tape in a 5 foot circle.
It's like it's more like an aura, you know, just kind of like the aura around you.
Couple of plugs, Dave. Your stair climb, the fight for air climb, is coming up
March 11th.
Yes, and you want to get your team together.
I do.
Are
I
you
do.
The captain?
I guess I am. Yes, I think I'm a captain. I think Patty Vasquez is a captain again.
Oh,
I
captain, think. My captain.
But are you guys fielding one team or two?
Well, it's never really clear. We're all kind of in it together.
So you have a
in
lack
it to
of
win it. Actually, in it to win it.
So yes, you want to win.
The team.
People from 5 to 79 climbing where? Presidential Towers?
Presidential Towers.
You could do one tower. You could do all four.
You could do one. You could do two. As many as you want, right? I've done the four the last 3 years or so, and it's great. I mean, and it's not like it's going to be your whole day. It doesn't take that long to climb a tower.
I heard you guys climbed one time and then went to a bar.
Oh, yeah, we do.
That was the first
do.
Year.
Then
see?
We, no,
they were
a couple years ago, Dave, we did the Bloody Mary bar.
Yeah, Mary, are you back this year?
I think I am.
Oh, good.
I'm coming back from Florida on Saturday, so I think I can make it.
184s.
Whose team are you going to be on, Mary?
2,340 steps.
How many?
2,340.
Don't tell me that.
It's nothing.
It's real. It is hard.
Nothing.
Dave and I, we get through it together.
Last year, Mary wasn't there.
No, sorry, Dave.
So you do the first tower, you take the elevator to the ground, and you start over on tower two?
Right.
Yeah.
And you're actually being timed when you're in the stairwell. You have a chip on your shoe.
I would just...
That stairwell probably smells.
No, it doesn't. It really doesn't.
No, it's aromatic.
You don't know.
Once you get into the elevator after the first tower, why wouldn't you just stay in the elevator?
I'd stay in the elevator.
Because there's so many other people in the elevator with you, you want to get out.
Actually, the elevator ends up smelling worse than the stairwell.
Makes sense.
By the third tower, you're like, ew, and get me out of here.
Join Stinky Dave and Stinky Mary.
We're not stinky.
We don't smell.
In the fight to end lung disease, Sunday, March 11th. 11th at the American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb, presented by United Healthcare. And that'll be at Presidential Towers in the West Loop. And Steva Las Vegas.
Steva Las Vegas.
Hit the jackpot with your best Blackhawk snapshot, slapshot situation. Yeah. You got to prove that you're the ultimate Blackhawks fan.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you have a man cave. Maybe you have a woman cave. Maybe you have a husband and wife cave. But you've done it up Blackhawks time. Maybe it's your car. You know, maybe it's your kid. Your kid's got an unbelievable Blackhawk room.
Maybe it's all of the above.
Could be. Could be. Who is the biggest Blackhawk fan? The ultimate Blackhawk fan. That's what we're looking for. Give you the opportunity to prove it. And then win a trip for two to Las Vegas to see the Blackhawks and the Golden Knights on February 13th. I'm going to do two shows out there with you.
Mm-hmm.
On the night of the 13th, game night.
Yes.
We will be doing a show with Justin Kaufman.
Yes.
And the way I picture this is you running around Vegas.
I'm going to be running around Vegas.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Reporting in.
Oh, I think I've been playing craps, sitting by the pool,
that's
checking out the Bellagio.
That's probably later.
Yeah, but we'll be reporting because it's going to be an anniversary, too, of the Mandalay, you know, the shooting by Mandalay Bay. We're going to go over there, check out the makeshift memorial. So sure. We'll be doing some new stuff.
And then the following morning, Pete will be on. And I'll be checking in with Pete and you before you head for the airport.
Yes.
I'll be checking in with Pete as well.
Yeah, maybe we can hit a buffet.
We're not going to a buffet.
Come on, it sounds like so much fun. We'll hit a buffet.
I once went to the Circus buffet. It's like a dollar. I was sick for a month.
Okay, but okay, go to...
That's how you make your money back.
Go to the buffet at the Wynn. Go to the buffet at the Bellagio. Trust me, you're not going to get sick.
That's
true. You might eat a little too much. I mean, the food's unbelievable.
I went to the Harrah's buffet last year. It's awesome.
You got to remember, I am training for the 21-24 Olympics.
Oh, that's right.
So I have to be careful.
That's true.
We take a lot of pictures.
That's only 110.
Well, you could enter the buffet Olympics. They have that out there.
Oh yeah, the eating Olympics.
I don't like buffets.
I do. I'll take care of that.
Yeah, I really don't.
We'll hit some of the good restaurants.
Who doesn't overeat at a buffet?
Oh, everybody does.
Yeah, I've made a career out of that. I
everybody
need to stop
does.
That.
You can regulate yourself.
You can, Captain Kale.
They actually probably don't even have kale.
I bet they do have kale on a buffet out there.
Yeah, maybe
I'm going to find out.
That's called the front lawn.
Yeah.
By the way, Captain Kale voted recently the least popular children's hero.
Yeah. Yes.
Sick. Are you the ultimate Blackhawks fan? Go to Vegas with us. Upload a photo. And Sandberg, they can do a video, can't they? Yeah. There's got to be a picture. She's checking now.
A photo.
But a video would be cool. You know, video? Why couldn't you send a photo with your video?
You could do that,
right?
Probably.
Right.
But photo, I think she's going to look at the photos. The best photo.
WGNradio.com/contest, and you could watch the Hawks and the Golden Knights in Las Vegas.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
.923, you know, Howie Mandel's bigger than ever. Been around for a long time, he's bigger than ever. That's the way you go. Everybody has a career like that. You get more famous, you get more rich, you get more handsome as time goes on.
That is true.
Right? And the third annual Howie Mandel stand-up gala, kids, is coming up. When's the 10th? Is that tonight?
That is tonight.
Tonight
on the CW. But Howie's got a whole bunch of stuff going on. Howie, it's been too long. Welcome back to the show.
It's good to be back. Is it a gala or a gala?
I think it depends where you are. Now, in Canadian, is it a gala or a gala?
You know what? I don't know. I don't know what I've done. I don't know whether I've done a gala or a gala.
Oh,
I know I'm Howie and not Hoey.
That's a good call.
That.
That's a very good call. That's a very good call.
But it's good. I know it's funny, and I know it's on tonight, and I know it's on the CW, and I know that it's the mecca of all things comedy at the Just for Laughs Festival up in Montreal. They close down the streets. Hundreds of thousands of people show up from all over the world to see the who's who and who will be who of comedy. So for 3 years in a row, the CW has been nice enough to record the festivities, and that's what's on tonight. And it's a nice respite from, you know, the news to just sit back and laugh, and you'll see Cedric the Entertainer, Orny Adams, many other iconic names, surprises, new faces who will be iconic.
And you doing some time as well?
Yes, I am. I wouldn't show up at a stand-up special without doing stand-up. Stand-up is my my favorite. I've done a lot of things. I do a lot of things. I judge and I host and I do. But stand up, if I had to choose one thing to only do, it would be stand up.
I always say
that's what I, you know. It's
the hardest thing in show business. It's the hardest thing in show business.
No. It's hard for me to do other stuff. It's, you know, for me, everything I've ever been punished for, expelled for, hit for is what I get paid for. Stand-up is the one, you know, it's that immediate satisfaction of
right.
going for a laugh. And I, you know, I've never, there's no lines to recite, there's no marks to hit, there's nothing to edit. You can just be free on stage doing stand-up. I love that.
I still, no, look, it's the hardest thing to do well. If you're a great actor, God bless you. If you're a great singer, God bless you. But you know what you're doing. You know, you've got some script. You've got some song. You're doing your thing. You get up. I always tell people this. You think you're funny? Today at work, get four people around in a circle and tell them your favorite joke. And when that trickle of sweat goes down your back, now at a two-drink minimum.
That's fantastic. You know, you're right. I never thought of that. Though, it's what I do, so I don't find right. it. I find it harder to restrain myself in other areas. And to be honest with you, I can't dance, and I think dancing is really hard. I can't dance, but I can do stand up, and I've been lucky. I mean, I found it. I didn't think I could do it. I just did it, and it wasn't considered stand up when I was young. It was considered a behavioral problem.
Right.
But
right,
my behavioral right. problem has turned into a career.
And when do you go back to America's Got Talent?
We start the they're going around the country right now auditioning, so it doesn't go back on the air until June. But they've started the auditions already.
How do they do that? The process of elimination. Like, when do you guys have to get involved as judges?
When they they travel, they being the producers and everybody, will travel all over the country and hold these giant auditions where thousands of people show up. And they see each and every person that shows up and submits their tape. And then they whittle it down to whittle. And whittling is not the right word. But mm-hmm. In March, it's all shot now in the Los Angeles area. And we sit and we'll see 40 or 50 acts a day. You know,
that's
every day.
A lot. That's a lot.
It's not a lot compared to what they see. And you know what? It seems like a lot. And I'm giving you a number. I could watch another 45. I could watch. I'd rather do that than go to sleep. I love watching act after act after act come out on stage. I can't tell you that, you know, I keep looking around thinking I'm going to wake up and this is a dream, that this is my job, because I love entertainment and people just showing up on stage. And the more original and crazier and wackier, and even if it's good, bad, or indifferent, I don't know why I'm just so drawn to just live performing in the same way that I like doing stand-up as I will tonight on the CW.
Howie, I like the guy juggling over you. I think that was one of my favorites, where he's juggling and then he starts.
Not so much for me.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was going to say. I was going to say there was a moment.
Watching, being part of danger yeah. when I think I can get hurt, I'm such a wuss. I don't want to get hurt, and nor do I want to see anybody else get hurt in front of me. I don't want to be, you know, a witness to any bloodletting.
Yeah, see, that's just it, though. I always think you're very nice and you're very diplomatic and whatnot. Has there ever been a time where you think that someone does not have talent and you think, okay, all right, how am I going to politely and nicely say,
get out of show business?
Yeah,
you know, the truth is that there are obviously many times when I'm not really taken with what somebody's doing. But then again, the empathy of being like a person on, you know, here's what the epitome of my career when I started, when I was in the 80s, I remember touring and I remember selling out Radio City Music Hall for two shows in one night. And, you know, 7,000 people sit in that theater and I was in the dressing room in between shows and with my wife, and we're looking out the window and 7th Avenue in New York City, 7,000 people are piling out, 7,000 people are going in, there's 14,000 people in the streets, there's cops, traffic is a little bit jammed, and my wife says, this is for you, but you don't look thrilled. And I said, you know what I'm thinking? And she said, what? And I said, well, this is a city of 10 million people, 9,985,000 people have no interest in being part of this or coming. Think of how many people don't want to see Howie Mandel right now in this city. So, and that's always like laid really heavy on me. So
sure.
The point is, just because I'm not reacting to something and just because I don't like it, you know, they're a human being who had the guts and the need to stand out there in front of me and
sure.
the public and everybody in America. So, you know, you're saying be gentle. They're human. I would like to to do. I'll treat somebody the way I hope that somebody would treat me. And just because I don't like it and I don't see it and it seems weird doesn't mean it's not good. But I'll be honest and tell you what I think about it. And if you care about what I think about it, and some people do, you know, then I'll tell you. But I'm not going to be mean.
Yeah, you know, I think this show has softened Simon. And I've always gotten along very well with him. But, you know, he's pretty tough on folks. So that's the reputation. And certainly has his moments.
I don't know, and I didn't know what to expect. And I got to say that Simon is one of the sweetest guys.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, he really is. And he really knows what he's talking about. And he cares about people. And I would imagine even. But I think that it was shocking to America when he showed up on the scene. We had never seen anybody on television be honest. You know, and I think his honesty, I would imagine if you looked back at those tapes now, it's not as mean as you remember.
That's
it.
That's a fair point.
It's just mean because nobody talked like that. Everybody was always incredibly positive and patting, and he'd go, listen, you shouldn't be singing. That sounded like a cat, you know, who was sick, and he's telling you what it is. But I got to say that having worked with him, when the camera, he really cares about people, and sometimes when the camera's off, he'll run up and go, listen, I didn't like it, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't still be trying, and he'll boost them up, and he'll give them a hug, and he cares about animals. We're all older, and I think as we get older and become more experienced and have children, he has a son, Eric, yep, who he loves dearly, I think we grow and we change as human beings, as we should. This is a great journey, so I don't know that he's softened, but he's just an amazing guy to work with, and I think he makes our show better than it would be without him.
Cedric the Entertainer, Costello Alonso, Orny Adams, my old sidekick on the radio, John Heffern, who's one of the best comics in the country and won the first NBC competition. What's the name of the show? Why am I blanking on
Last Comic Standing.
That's it. All with Howie Mandel, and it's tonight on the CW, 7 o'clock Chicago time. If you want to follow Howie, don't do it in person. Do it online. And what, are you going to send them to your website? What's the best way to do that?
They can go, you know, at Howie Mandel on Instagram and on Twitter and whatever. And you could text me. Don't text me.
No, don't text you. What are you talking
about? Tweet and I'll tweet back. I don't know what to do. I don't know. And I'm on Friendster and MySpace and all this.
Is it Gala or Gala? Spend the day figuring that out.
I don't know that, but I'm Hoey.
Yes, you are Hoey. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
It's 9:33. It's time for you right after we do this. As you heard just a moment ago, if you're listening, and by the way, Ro is going to join us in just a second as well. Mill Rosenberg died last night, and no more fitting words than those expressed several times already in the past few minutes since we heard. There's only one.
Yep.
There's only one good, bad, and everything in the middle. There's only one Milt Rosenberg. His good friend Joe Morris wrote a beautiful obituary that describes a life well lived. He died at 92 from complications of pneumonia. Host of Extension 720 for nearly 40 years, ending in 2012. Full-time professor of psychology at the University of Chicago. An amazing memory and wide reading experience. And I would tell you, over the course of those 40 years, he sold more books than Amazon. If you were an author, you wanted to sell a book, you did the Milt Rosenberg Extension 720 show. And he could talk to anybody, political leaders, business executives, teachers, students, journalists, artists, coworkers. I did his show many times. You filled in for him many times.
I anchored his news for 7 years, from 98 to 2004, and would be his fill-in when he would take a day off.
Right.
And I told you off the air, it's so sad. He was such a wonderful man and such a wealth of knowledge. And we did a year in review show 1 year, and it was the only time I'd ever heard him talk about the ancient Minoan civilization and Sex in the City, with great knowledge of both.
He could do both.
In the same show.
He married Marjorie Ann in 1954. They had one son, Matthew Rosenberg, who lives in Seattle. They both survive him. There's also two grandchildren, close friend Claire Favrière, and I'm sorry about the pronunciation stumbling there, and a lifetime as an academic and a good time. Milt Rosenberg. Let me go around the room here, starting with you. Anything else you wanted to say?
I loved working with him. He was just a brilliant, brilliant man, and I became very good friends with many of his producers, who I'm still friends with to this day, Julie Truman. And they would always say he was so wonderful to produce for, but so challenging and so hard is because they had to take all of his producers had to take a current events quiz.
Yeah, that's the way you got hired.
Before they were hired. Right. So, I mean, he made everybody just smarter and better and just a wonderful guy. You could go to Milt Rosenberg with any question and he would have an answer for you. So just I really am very blessed that I got to work with him for those many years.
Dave?
You know, very eclectic because he would come on a lot after Cubs games or after we did basketball games or Blackhawks. And he would do, even though it wasn't necessarily a sports show, he would do an hour coming out of a game on sports. And he knew his stuff. And he brought in fascinating people coming from different directions.
He's a good broadcaster.
Yeah.
He knew how to thread shows.
He knew how to put a show together.
Yeah, he did.
Very entertaining guy. And not easy to work for. You talked about his producers. He demanded that you do your job.
Yeah.
Mary Vandeveld, any thoughts on Milt?
No, he was just a wonderful man, and I never did work with him, but I, you know, passed him in the hallways, had little conversations with him, and knew his producers were always running their butts off trying to make sure they had all the facts.
It seemed
right.
Like, didn't it seem
so
like
they stayed out of trouble?
Yeah.
Didn't it seem like Milt was always here? I mean, he was here when he got here in the morning, and then he would go have lunch at the Intercontinental.
And then he'd go over and get a snoot next door at the hotel before. No, he did. He absolutely did.
He didn't try to hide it.
He'd go over and get a little something to start the engine.
Always in his office, and wall from ceiling to floor filled with books, and he was always playing classical music, and you'd go in with question on anything, city politics, you know, ancient history.
Google.
He was Google.
He was Google before there was Google.
Absolutely.
Steve Bertrand, any thoughts on Milt?
And he always wanted to know what the scoop was behind the scenes.
He was such a gossip. He's not lying. He was such a gossip.
Oh, in a good way.
I just love that. And I think it was Andrew who pointed out the current events quiz. There was more than that, I think. The test he would give to his producers was hilarious. You know, I just was exchanging voicemails with Bill Young, and I know you guys know Bill, the guy who would bring all these authors in through the years. And, you know, Rosenberg, like you said, Steve, you know, he sold books.
Yeah, without a question.
Margaret Thatcher would come into town, and they would have to book the Milt Rosenberg show because he was the show that moved books.
All over the country, you would get the best long-form interview for your long-form book as opposed to the 5 minutes you might get on morning TV if you're lucky. I'll tell you that I had a great relationship with him. I told him we should always do a show called Smart and Dumber.
Oh, yeah, you did.
And he loved when I needled him because I'd always go up to him and go, "You're not so smart. When are you going to drop the act?"
I used to fill in for him once in a while and, you know, would have no control over the topic. And I still remember one, like I found out the day before. The topic was pre-Columbian Mesoamerica.
Yeah.
I really still don't know what that is.
There was a moment when Bill Leff and I and Patty Vasquez were on the show before Patty was doing a show here. And we're talking about stand-up comedy, and he goes, and when we come back from the break, I will describe an improv scene. You know, Milt, we're not probably going to do improv. We come back from the break, and he goes, Napoleon at a French cafe, and scene.
And you did it, didn't you?
And for the guy that knew him longer than any of us, Orion, any thoughts on Milt?
Well, the most intelligent radio talk show on the air ever. And he probably used more words that I didn't understand than any colleague I've had, because he was a master of the language, and he would come up with words to describe situations that I'd never heard before. So he was fun to work with. The interesting thing I discovered, if he had one weakness in knowledge, it was in agriculture. He just never really studied agriculture very much.
Never got his boots dirty.
Nope. Once in a while, he'd call up and say, "What's this all about?" And,
yeah. Well, that's the thing, too. He deserves respect for that. He never went on a show without preparation.
He
never took the audience for granted, and he knew his stuff.
He did a great interview.
Or he did his research today.
He did a great interview with Jesse Ventura. I remember part of it was pre-tape right when he left wrestling and was running for office. And he said, "What were you thinking?" I thought, God, good for you, Milt. For what Roy Leonard was with celebrities is what Milt Rosenberg was.
It's just so funny that Steve brought up the gossip thing, though. I'm telling you. He'd be in the hallway going, come here. What's going on? You know what's going on. Tell me what's going on.
Do you remember his crosstalk with Cap and Waddle?
Oh, brilliant. Oh, that's
that was kind of the highlight of the evening.
Absolutely brilliant. Yeah, yes. Brilliant. He was great at insulting people.
Awesome.
He was like Don Rickles with a brain.
Imagine going from one show to the other.
Roe's
going to
join us in just a second, and obviously memories of Milt throughout the day, and we're working on a special for him as well. But God bless you. Milt Rosenberg gone at 92. Well, we plan on talking to Roe for much different reasons and goofing around and stuff, but when Milt Rosenberg passed away, that changed things, and I'm sure Milt's giggling in heaven already. I knew I'd get you, Cochran. All the years in town, Roe, you must have met him at some point.
I did. I met him a number of times. The interesting thing is when I was first starting out, I was looking for producer jobs, and his was among those producer jobs in Chicago or legman jobs, whether it was for Royco or Jacobson or somebody. But he was one of the top jobs to get. And, you know, you've heard everybody talk about his producers and how frazzled they were. Well, it's because it was a great learning experience.
Sure.
You know, he was a guy, he was a mentor, and he was a guy that was, you know, was exacting about everything that he, you know, he wanted out of the people who were working for him. And he was so detailed. And at one point, when I first applied for it, you had to have a master's degree or better to get the job.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
That was in the late 80s. He later then, you know, went strictly just to the admissions test, which was
the current events quiz.
Which was the current events
quiz. I remember.
Changed.
Williams will talk about this later, but I remember he and John Williams having an argument in the hallway. And John doesn't argue with people because John booked an author, not knowing Milt had already booked the author. And Milt had a rule you did not violate. If he had somebody on as an author, you do not book that person.
Steve, that was citywide. He insisted on the first interview in the city or he wouldn't do it.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just remember, it's the only time I ever saw Williams get in an argument with somebody.
Yeah, it's funny. I later adopted that same rule, and that lasted exactly 1 week before every author said, no, that's all right, we're doing Milt.
You know what's funny?
So I'm like, well, but they can have the second? How about the third?
We're doing Good Day Chicago on Fox, then Ro.
Steve was bringing up the gossip thing, and I was thinking, Ro, all those years at WLS, I'm thinking you were the biggest gossip there.
Oh, God, no. No, I was the one they were gossiping most about, that was for sure. But
what illness does he think he has today?
Yeah, that's the same. Yeah, yeah, that too.
You got a plug for this afternoon? No,
you just heard Steve mention all the stuff that's happening. The Trump thumbs are working overtime this morning. Mm-hmm.
Tweet it up.
So we'll get you up to date on what he's doing there.
Thanks for awkwardly plugging the show.
Thank you.
Well, what are you supposed to do? How do you follow that? Right? That's Ro.
That's weird. We're going to do that, too.
Wendy and Harry.
Yes.
Following right now.
Harry Tynowitz. Bill is back on Friday. Harry
Tynowitz.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm all right. Nice to see you. It's been a long time.
It has been a long time, but I keep the pictures and the stuffed kangaroo near the bed. And it's great really to be weird with all of you.
Paul Conrad and Harry and I were in a love triangle, and none of us knew it.
Hey, Harry, how you doing?
I'm living a lot.
I hear that all too often.
Here's Wendy.
All right, this is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.